from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. 6 months ago, January 1, marijuana stores across Colorado started selling recreational pot legally to anyone over the age of 21. First state in the union to do it. Alongside medical marijuana, it is now a booming business, and Colorado has quickly become the nation's laboratory for mainstreaming marijuana. The legal, economic, social, and health implications, well, we're learning. They've learned it's hard for consumers to understand how much THC is in a particular brownie, and a lot more. This hour on Point, 6 months of recreational marijuana in Colorado. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is your state headed down this road, considering it? What's your question from Colorado's experience? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Here was January 1st, the day that legal retail sales of recreational pot began. The Colorado Springs Gazette talked to Andy Williams, owner of a Denver dispensary called The Medicine Man.
This morning, to see these lines that are, you know, wrapping around a parking lot, they're moving fast, people are happy, they're celebratory. People are waving the American flag. You feel a big collective sense of relief.
And here's one buyer in January, Danny Connors, talked with the Associated Press.
To have that receipt that says I made a legal purchase in my lifetime, I'd rather have that than see the third coming of God.
Wow. Okay, we've got 6 months' experience now. Colorado's looking back at what it's learned, and so are we. With us right now from Denver is Ricardo Baca. He is marijuana editor, yes, marijuana editor for the Denver Post, runs their blog The Cannabist on all things marijuana. Ricardo Baca, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Can you run us through the numbers, Ricardo? First, just on the volume of pot that's being sold, the revenues for the entrepreneurs, or ganjapreneurs, some are calling them, and the revenue for the state. What's the scale of what's unfolded?
You know, what we're looking at in the first 6 months is pretty astounding. We only have numbers through the first 4 months, but those numbers are even pretty amazing as they stand alone, because more than $200 million of medical and recreational pot has been sold in those first 4 months that have been counted, that have been tallied, and more than $17 million in taxes from both medical and recreational have been tallied from January through the end of April.
200 in just 4 months. Now we're at 6 months, so it's up presumably well above that. What's the ratio of medical marijuana versus recreational marijuana being sold, Ricardo?
You know, it's almost 2-to-1 medical. A lot of people wondered if the people obtaining medical marijuana licenses would go down after recreational legal sales started. That has not happened. More and more people are going to get their medical red cards, as they're called, to be able to buy cheaper marijuana because it is so recreational is so much more expensive. So yes, way more medical marijuana is being sold than recreational at this time.
Now, for those of us not in Colorado who may not get this, why is recreational marijuana more expensive than medical marijuana? Is it the same product?
You know, in many cases, it's the same product, but they're different sets of products. So ultimately, it's the power of free market. Colorado legalized medical marijuana in the year 2000, and we've been polishing that system for more than a decade. So those prices have wound their way down, and now with the newly introduced legal recreational sales, which began 6 months ago, that free market is just now starting. And when it started, it was about twice the price. So if you were buying an eighth of medical, it was about twice that price for an eighth of recreational weed here in Colorado. And people are wondering how long it's going to take for those recreational prices to settle. That has not started to happen yet. It's still so popular, so fresh, and there's still so much demand that it just hasn't gone there yet.
An eighth. You're well into the lingo here. Now, the taxes are much higher on recreational marijuana. Is that correct, Ricardo?
Significantly higher, and that's another reason why a lot of people would rather buy medical. Yeah, many times when you're buying medical pot, you're buying less. You're paying less than 10% in taxes. Depending on the municipality that you're buying recreational weed in, you're paying around 30% between all of the taxes.
A lot of this move was sold on the basis that the tax revenues from by the state would be collected and spent on new schools for Colorado. How's that going? What's the revenue look like? How's the school building going?
Hasn't started just yet. You know, what they're looking at is the first fiscal year. So that first fiscal year starts July 1st. But what they are, they're looking at it, and they feel very optimistic about the school construction and then having money left over to use for other things, you know, for infrastructure. At the same time, we hosted a panel at the Denver Post, the editorial page did, just 2 weeks ago. And they were sure, they had a guest on there from the state who is very clear to point out, you know, this does seem like a lot of money when you're talking about $200 million in sales, but when you're looking at a state that has a operating budget of $12 billion, it's kind of a drop in the bucket, so it's not going to make a big difference on things like, you know, roads and infrastructure like that. But they are still looking forward to spending the first $40 million raised in recreational marijuana taxes on schools.
I'm reading here 9,000-plus Coloradans now working one way or another in the marijuana business. What's the retail profile look like, and what's the processing or manufacturing arena look like in this industry?
And you know what that statistic means is that's how many people are licensed by the state to work in the marijuana industry. I don't think all of those people are currently employed, but okay. It is still kind of an astounding number because it's 9,600 people, and that's about the same number of Coloradans who are employed as law enforcement officers. But you know, it's a thriving industry. We even had we've seen multiple marijuana job fairs where you go and we're talking about lines around the block of people who want to get into the industry, and they want to talk to people who could either teach them how to do that or potentially hire them. So it's a very, very appetizing market, especially for a lot of young people who want to be working around this plant that is newly legal that they're very passionate about.
Now, not every community has gone for this, right? The individual communities can decide whether they're on board. Is that right, Ricardo?
It's true, and it's one of the most significant differences between Colorado's law and Washington's law. Of course, Washington State will begin its legal recreational sales next week, it's looking like. And their individual municipalities don't have the option to opt out. But in Colorado, if you're a city and you don't want recreational pot in your town, you know, if your city council makes that decision, if your operating board makes that decision, there will not be any recreational pot in your town. It doesn't have to be. And if you look at the map on the cannabis, you know, you can just look at zoom out, so it's a statewide view, and you just see this island of eastern Colorado where there's no recreational marijuana being sold.
More conservative part of Colorado. What about pot tourism coming in and out?
It's a hotly debated issue right now, and it's fascinating to cover it because on one hand, you have the city's touristic agency and the state's tourism division. Both of which have no opinion on this. They don't have a comment. They will not talk about it on the record. You know, they're just kind of in a wait-and-see holding pattern, somewhat similar to the mayor of Denver and the governor of Colorado. On the other hand, you do have some pretty undeniable numbers that show this is a real thing. I'm not saying it's anything near what skiing, snowboarding has become to the Rocky Mountain region in Colorado, but you know, we know for a fact that there are many, many people coming here to get that first legal purchase, to frame the receipt. You know, lots of people, tens of thousands of people came to Colorado for 420 weekend, where the largest 420 rally is held, in addition to the largest cannabis cup, which is thrown by High Times magazine.
April 20th, a big pot day, two deaths that we're reading here. Can you describe those for us?
Absolutely. Both deaths were linked by the Denver police to edible marijuana. So you had one, he was a teenager, a foreign exchange student who ate too much of a cookie and fell off a hotel balcony. And you had another, a gentleman who lived in a nice area of Denver. He had eaten too much of an edible and he was speaking kind of crazy talk. His wife called 911. She was on the phone with 911 for more than 10 minutes, and he shot her dead. So the police both had linked, and the coroner had linked both of these deaths to edible marijuana, and it certainly created a part of the story that a lot of people didn't anticipate coming.
What about emergency room visits? We're going to speak with a doctor, but we hear they're up.
They are, you know, and I think you don't have to look any further than the Maureen Dowd column from the New York Times a few weeks ago to understand why they would be up.
She talked about medical edible marijuana. She didn't know how much. She ate some way more than she expected, the high she got, sort of off the charts for her.
She did, and that's happening a lot. I think you have a lot of people who are so excited to be in Colorado. They land at Denver International Airport. They go to their first recreational pot shop of their entire life, and they buy a candy bar. And maybe once they get back to their friend's house or the hotel, they're so excited that they eat the whole candy bar or that half candy bar without reading on the directions of the candy bar saying, this is a marijuana product, and it's 10 doses. So they should be splitting that into 10 different pieces. They're not. And then you freak out. You absolutely do freak out. I've been there. Many of my friends and colleagues have been there. And in many of those situations, they do call an ambulance or ask a friend to drive them to the emergency room. And I'm curious what you'll hear from that doctor, because many people just say, you need to wait this out. It's okay. You're just high, that kind of a thing. So,
yeah, a lot of learning going on in Colorado. Ricardo Bacco is marijuana editor at the Denver Post, runs the cannabis site there for the Post. Joined us today from Denver, Colorado. We're going to plunge on in here. Ricardo, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at Colorado's experience with legalized recreational marijuana 6 months in, what it's turning out to really mean as other states consider this path. Here, 420, April 20th, holiday is celebrated among cannabis users. Colorado Springs news station KRDO talked with Rick Hoover from The Spot, a marijuana dispensary in Denver, said his sales were up 20%, booming.
People are coming from out of state. They're coming from New Mexico. Texas has been huge.
What's it all add up to? The governor of Colorado still sounding kind of ambivalent. This was Colorado's Democratic governor, John Hickenlooper, in May, not a supporter of the legalized recreational pot, saying he was not eager to jump on the marijuana bandwagon.
I opposed legalizing marijuana in Colorado. I didn't want to be the first. I would have much rather done it as a nation, right, together. But we're involved, whether we like it or not, in one of the great social experiments of the 21st century of how do we make this thing work?
And we're looking at how that great social experiment, if the governor is correct, is working out. With us right now from Telluride, Colorado, is Sheriff Bill Masters, Sheriff of San Miguel County, county with 5 marijuana dispensaries, 4 of which are in the town of Telluride, also borders Utah. Sheriff Masters, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
And with us, also from the Denver Post, editorial writer there, joining us from Chicago today, is Alicia Caldwell. Alicia, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sheriff Masters, let's just get your perspective on how this is working out. At 6 months, what have you learned? How do you think it's going?
Well, so it's going fairly well. I have to admit, we just had our annual Bluegrass Festival here, 15,000 people, which is a lot for us. We're a very rural community, very rural county, mm-hmm. and so the urban areas might have completely different experience. But we just had 15,000 people here for a big party, certainly a lot of them drinking alcohol and using marijuana products. I think the stores did very well this past weekend, and they but the sheriff's office, for the first time in history, I've been a law enforcement officer for 39 years,
yeah.
And we made zero custody arrests, no detox arrests, no arrests whatsoever during the Bluegrass Festival.
So that says to what does that say to you?
We did have a few, but
yeah.
Well, it's kind of surprising. We thought we were going to have more of an impact from people overdosing, as Ricardo was saying, on the infused products and causing some kind of law enforcement problem. And, you know, there were a few that we had to go and deal with, you know, people in the wrong tents or, you know, falling around, this kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. nobody that was at the level of needing involuntary detoxification.
What about the driving issue? We've heard about the difficulty of determining if somebody's driving stoned. How do you deal with that, Sheriff Masters?
It's definitely a problem, you know, but it's a problem we should have started dealing with 50 years ago and have been realist that there were a lot of people smoking pot for the past 50 years in the United States, and we probably, you know, we should have, as law enforcement community, developed systems of some type to be able to detect people that are driving not only on pot but also prescription drugs, and we're way behind the ball on that. If people are eating infused products and driving, it's quite difficult compared to DUI or compared to driving under the influence of alcohol to detect those people. It's not impossible, but you have to be specially trained to do it.
And what about people transporting pot out of Colorado? You're a sheriff there, not far from the Utah border. Do you look at that as your problem, or that's the problem of law enforcement outside the state?
No, I think it is my problem. I think the worst thing we have is really that these two amendments are constitutional amendments. And so they weren't reviewed carefully by the legislature and developed as reasonable regulations that are going to control the use and manufacture of marijuana, especially when it comes to medical marijuana. So there's a huge fraud going on with medical marijuana, as you were discussing with Ricardo, that people are getting medical marijuana cards, even though they're not really ill, in order to bypass the recreational taxes and the regulations going along with recreational, which are a lot more stringent than it is with medical marijuana. And with medical marijuana, you can't pass a law against it in your own community. It is a right. You're allowed to grow the number of plants that you have a prescription for. And some of these doctors are frauds as well, and they're giving out prescriptions for 75 plants, which is totally ridiculous that a person needs 75 plants because they're ill.
That is industrial strength volume.
It's a snowboarder. You know, it's an amendment that other states need to pay attention to and need to force their legislature to pass reasonable medical marijuana legislation so that they can actually control it, because it's out of control here. And people are developing huge grow operations under the guise of being medical marijuana caregivers, which is another fraud. They go and sign up a bunch of their friends to get medical marijuana cards and then get their prescriptions assigned to them so they can have huge grow operations. They're growing way more marijuana than they can possibly consume, and that marijuana is being processed and then into the black market and transport to other states.
There's a front to keep an eye on. Sheriff Masters, stand by on Telluride. Alicia Caldwell with the Denver Post. Alicia, step back with us here for a second. 6 months in now, we've got so many questions, and maybe you've got polling that you've done out of the Denver Post, but how do you think Coloradans overall, you're an editorial writer, how do they feel about how this is going and whether they've made a mistake or done the right thing? What's the sense of the state, Alicia?
Well, Tom, in April of 2014, Quinnipiac did a poll, in fact, about legalization, and Coloradans still support marijuana legalization, despite some of the issues and bumps and starts that we've had in implementing policy. However, just 15% said they've tried it since legalization, so I don't think there's a tidal wave of people taking advantage of the new law. However, I thought an interesting wrinkle in that Quinnipiac poll was that a majority of folks said they're not voting for politicians who say they are heavy users. So there are limits to our tolerance, apparently.
Alicia, is it changing society or social interactions? I mean, when you go to a cocktail party now in Colorado, might there just be pot there and everybody's just, oh yeah, fine, no big deal? Or is it not integrated like that?
Well, I don't know that it's quite as mainstream as that. I have heard of such gatherings where people bring out their vaporizing devices at a certain point and everyone lights up, so to speak. But I frankly have not been to a party like that, a cocktail party, so I don't know that it's necessarily quite as mainstream as that. But I've heard some stories.
I mean, we saw this news from the Colorado Symphony Orchestra announcing a classically cannabis concert series, kind of weed concerts, Beethoven and Brownies, somebody described it. Now, maybe they went back on that or made it less public or something, but that suggests that it's kind of out there, it's beginning to mainstream.
Absolutely. And the symphony's been, as many symphonies are in major cities, hurting financially. Ah. And this was, I believe, an effort to try to raise some money, a curiosity, so to speak. And they did run into trouble with the public-private issue because part of the constitutional amendment was that nothing in this amendment shall be construed to allow the public consumption of marijuana. Now, that's an issue. And the city attorney in Denver went to the symphony and said, hey, wait a second, this isn't exactly in keeping with the constitutional amendment. So they backed down, they modified the event, but yeah, it was, I think it was a shock for a lot of people that the symphony would be one of the first in on the marijuana marketing issue.
Come and smoke some weed and listen to Beethoven. I want to talk about public consumption. That has turned out to be more subtle and intricate than expected. Sheriff Masters pointing to a number of things that may need more attention here, but let me get my callers in as well, if I may. Mike in Williamsburg, Virginia. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What's your question?
Hi, Tom. That's H-I-G-H, Tom. I got a couple quick questions. The first one is, is marijuana mandated to have, like, an ingredients label or a potency, much like alcohol? So if you buy it, you know it's, like, you know, 100 proof or, you know, I don't know exactly how they would categorize it. If you are employed and you are legally smoking weed, I guess, and you end up, let's say you're working in a restaurant and you cut yourself, can your employer then say that you're under the influence of marijuana and then not cover you in Colorado? And then last but not least, you brought up a good point, that being driving under the influence of marijuana. How can the police pull you over and give you a ticket if you're actually, you know, using something that's legal? It's like pulling someone over for having a cheeseburger. I don't know if that's the right comparison.
It may be close. Let us find out, Mike. I appreciate your call, Sheriff Masters. What about the last one first? If recreational pot is legal, what are your options in law enforcement when someone's driving erratically under the influence?
Well, of course, it's illegal to drive after drinking, and alcohol is legal. So it's the same process. We have laws in our traffic laws that prohibit a person.
Can you measure how stoned somebody is? I mean, alcohol, we understand the limits. They're pretty well known. What about pot?
But there are limits, and I'm going to get beyond my scientific knowledge here real quickly, but there are limits set under Colorado law. And one of the problems is we don't have a breathalyzer-type equipment. You have to take a blood draw and then send it away to have it analyzed. That takes a few weeks. And in the meantime, if the person couldn't post bond, they might be languishing in jail for a couple of weeks, and then their blood come back and show that they were below the limit.
That's expensive for everybody. Sheriff Bill Masters in Telluride, Colorado, we've got more turf to cover, but we're very grateful to you being on with us for a few minutes here, Sheriff. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
Alicia Caldwell, what about the stoned at work? You cut yourself. Does your employer have to cover your medical costs?
Well, you know, the issue of marijuana in the workplace has been one that was debated and somewhat controversial at the time, and there have been several court cases to take on that issue. The constitutional amendment says that that an employer can still prohibit marijuana on the job. So I think the culpability for an injury probably would turn on whether it was prohibited or not. I mean, certainly you could litigate in civil court whether someone was too stoned, even if there's not a prohibition. But, for instance, they can still do urine analysis at particular companies that feel it's a priority to have people on staff who are not using marijuana. And even though it's legal in Colorado, employers still can prohibit it on the job and enforce that through drug testing.
Alicia Caldwell with the Denver Post standby. I want to welcome into our conversation from Denver Dr. Richard Zane. He's chair of the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Colorado Hospital, expert in toxicology. Dr. Richard Zane, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've got plenty of questions for you, but let me give you our Virginia caller's question about potency and labeling. This seems to have become an issue as people get into infused products or edibles, and some of them end up in your emergency room. But is the law explicit, and how explicit is it, about labeling the potency of any particular marijuana that's sold product?
If I could just correct you for one second.
Please
I'm not a toxicologist. I'm chair of emergency medicine, and I run a large emergency department, and I have experience by seeing many patients who have experimented with edibles and marijuana who are coming into the emergency department, starting when it became legal and currently today. Mm-hmm. The law says that there has to be a label on the product that how much THC is in there and what constitutes a dose. What we're finding is that when you compare one product to another, there's different amounts. It's not exactly matching what's on the label. But most importantly is that when you eat marijuana and you ingest THC, there's a tremendous variability in how it's absorbed. Inhaled marijuana, it's bioavailable about 30%. When it's eaten, it's anywhere between 3 and 4 and 5 and 15%.
Does that depend on the person or on the product, Dr. Zane?
It depends on the person, and it varies from person to person, and varies from that person to the next time they try marijuana.
Wow. So even if you know what the dosage is, you may not be able to anticipate the impact.
If you know what the dosage is, you certainly may not be able to impact what the dose is going to be, what the impact is. The other problem is that it's not following common convention. So one cookie is 6 doses, one chocolate bar is 20 doses, a lollipop is 10 doses, a gummy bear. I mean, it's ridiculous that there are gummy bears with THC, but a gummy bear is more than a dose. This is just not common convention. And we're finding people who will go into a store, will eat a cookie, and it's 6 doses, and then half an hour later, they still haven't felt the effect, so they eat another half a cookie, and then they have very bad, dramatic reactions to the THC.
What is coming into your emergency room on this front?
Mostly from the edibles. Patients who are coming in who've taken far too much because it's unpredictable, and they're coming in from anywhere from agitation to unremitting violent vomiting to hallucinations and psychosis, and it's every single day.
Every day. Alicia Caldwell, this issue of labeling and potency and people's reactions seems to have been one thing that Colorado's learned a lot about in this 6 months.
Yeah, it has been an experiment with some not-so-beneficial results, as Dr. Zane has mentioned. A lot of people are figuring out their own tolerances, apparently, just by trial and error. It was something that the legislature has addressed this past session and will address in the next session, especially this issue of trying to keep some of these products that look like familiar pieces of candy out of the hands of kids who just, you know, they see a gummy bear, they want to eat a gummy bear. It's a dangerous situation.
Dr. Zane, I'm reading here a school district superintendent in Northern Colorado, John Gates, pleading to parents for crying out loud, secure your weed. This about kids getting into it, and sometimes little kids eating pot gummy bears, you name it.
Well, look, I'm speaking to you as an emergency physician and as a father, and I have an 8-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 16-year-old. And if my 8-year-old goes over to a friend's home and sees a bag with gummy bears in it, he should be able to eat a gummy bear because he's an 8-year-old kid, and so should his friends. And if people cannot be sufficiently responsible to keep this locked up, then they do not or should not have the right to be able to buy it. And that begs the question of how can one actually make a gummy bear infused with THC? What is the point or the purpose? If you're looking for the drug or you're looking for the high, whether it's in a gummy bear or in a tablet, should not matter.
But Alicia, you're writing, I mean, it's all kinds of places now. This infused oils in edibles, candies, salad dressing, pasta sauce. Colorado's got all that going on.
It does. It does. And as I mentioned, there's been quite a lot of debate about that and about the potency issue. Because the Department of Regulatory Affairs is starting to test for these sorts of concentrations. But, you know, there's also been an issue with getting the laboratory infrastructure up and running to be able to handle the volume and reliably make these judgments.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at Colorado's experience with legalized recreational marijuana 6 months in. January 1st, it went into effect, and there's a lot going on. We're looking at what it's turning out to really mean as other states consider this path, everything from liberal Oregon to libertarian Alaska. lots of states in motion on the marijuana front. Dr. Richard Zane is with us from Denver, chair of the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Colorado Hospital there. He's getting a lot of experience in a hurry on this front. Alicia Caldwell is with us, editorial writer for the Denver Post. The whole state, a kind of big laboratory now, and the whole country's watching to see how this works out. If you've got it in the form of candy, watch out. Just a month ago in Denver, 7-year-old Israel Perez hospitalized after accidentally eating marijuana gummy candies. At a friend's house, his mother, Alyssa, told Denver news station 9 News she supports stricter laws for edibles.
If making money comes at the cost of Colorado people or their children or hurting people, I don't think it's worth it. Just be smart about it. Be smart about it. If you want this kind of privilege, be responsible.
And some moms not so sure they like all this in Washington State, where they're headed down this road in just a few days now. KXYL, a Colorado news station, talked with one mom who says she's unsure about the impact on her children.
I am concerned about how things will change for them as they start being exposed to more frequent drug use at a much younger age than I ever was.
Well, look at that. We've got lots of callers, lots of questions. Sean in New Orleans, Louisiana. Sean, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Yeah.
How are you?
Fine.
I was hoping your guest could talk about pricing and price fixing in Colorado, because the way I see it, if the market was to determine the price of marijuana, it would undercut the price in the illicit market and lead to exportation out of Colorado, and then it would probably lead the social experiment there to fail and the federal government would step in. So what has Colorado done to fix prices, and how has that affected the illicit market?
That's a very interesting question. Alicia, can you help us out there? What about it? How are all the – you've got medical marijuana, you've got recreational, and then I'm reading here in the clips from your newspaper and others, there's still plenty of illicit marijuana. How are all the prices interacting, Alicia?
Well, you know, as our other guests have mentioned, the price of recreational marijuana is higher because of the taxes included. Recently, we had a forum on the first 6 months of legal marijuana, and the question was asked, how is the street market doing? And as it turns out, the street price apparently is about equal to the medical marijuana price, which makes you wonder whether there is sort of a pervious barrier, where it's flowing back and forth from from medical marijuana.
So the illegal street price, in other words, is roughly equivalent to the cheaper medical marijuana and less than recreational legal marijuana.
Exactly.
What's keeping it that way? How's that working?
Well, the suspicion is that people are buying it, and we've seen an increase in those who have red cards. People are buying it with their red card and selling it on the street, and, you know, I don't know if they're making a little money off of it. I'm not sure exactly how that translates, but that's kind of flowing back and forth from the illegal market to the legal medical market.
Dr. Zane, you look mainly at the medical impacts, but you're a smart guy. You must be thinking about the pricing. What do you see?
The use is just going up and up and up, and there is no decrease. There's, as everybody's reported across the state, the medical marijuana card numbers go up. We see patients all the time in the emergency department who have red cards, and it's just ubiquitous and growing.
When they come to the ER, is it typically because they've misjudged the amount that they're ingesting or what its impact is going to be, Dr. Zane?
It depends on how they present and why they present. Patients who eat edibles who are not familiar with the edible, or it's a new edible, or it's a different day, or they took it with a different strain of something, will come in with exacerbated effects of marijuana, which could include their hearts going very, very fast. We have recurrent patients who come in for a side effect known as cannabinoid hyperemesis, which is violent, unremitting vomiting due to ingestion of cannabinoids. And it can be random. It can be certainly recurrent. And that's a very common presentation, something I'd never heard of before I moved to Colorado. We see patients who will go and buy a lollipop and suck on a lollipop and realize that 45 minutes later it's just too much for them and come in with the effects of marijuana. We'll see patients who are on medical marijuana who want other things for pain. We'll see patients who have run out of their marijuana. We'll see patients who've taken too much marijuana.
What do you see socially, Dr. Zane? Is it bleeding into ordinary social life in your experience, or is it kind of still staying in the same strands of society that it was in when it was illegal?
No, it's becoming normalized, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I very commonly see marijuana tourists who have a bad effect and come to the emergency department with the effects of marijuana. We have a large cadre of patients that we're sort of sorting through now analytically who are from California, over 300 of them who came during a period of time with marijuana-related or those types of related issues that we haven't quite figured out why they were here. So this is a learning experience that is getting larger and larger, and it's clearly not getting less dramatic.
What about children's exposure? You've got kids. Pot's been around. It's not as though American children haven't been exposed to pot in lots of places for a long time. But what do you see happening as it's legalized? Do you see more responsible attitudes developing because it's not illicit, or just more exposure? Is that good or bad?
So now I'm speaking as a father and not a physician.
Mm-hmm.
I see that my 8-year-old will come home from school and talk about gummy bears that they're not supposed to eat and talk about things that they've seen on the news or they've talked about at school. I've seen my teenager will come home and discussion of marijuana is simply ubiquitous.
How do you feel about that?
I think I have smart kids and I think that I'm a good father and I think that I can guide them properly. And I'm mostly worried about my small children eating a cookie when they're at a friend's house. That's the biggest impact that I've seen in both my personal and professional life has been the unthinking nature that edibles have been unleashed onto the populace of Colorado.
Ann in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Ann, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I've got a question for Dr. Zane, and I hope that more guests will discuss the detrimental personal and economic hits that are being caused by this that are of much concern. I had a psychiatrist in the D.C. area tell me that he was treating a young man who went into psychosis after consuming marijuana, and he was having a lot of trouble bringing him back. But my question is to Dr. Zane, doesn't marijuana cause brain injury? Very simply put, brain injury.
Dr. Zane?
I think that recreational marijuana use can cause all kinds of injuries, just like other drugs like alcohol have been linked to different kinds of injury. And I can't really speak to the chronic effects of marijuana on a growing brain, although it's been written about a lot. What we do see are patients who have psychiatric disorders being more prone to addiction, including marijuana or alcohol or any drugs. And we are clearly seeing that on the societal impact of marijuana being legal.
Alicia, we know that alcohol also can have detrimental health impacts of all kinds. How are Coloradans now looking at pot? Are they extending the same kind of indulgence to it that we do to alcohol? People enjoy it, many, for recreation, but it can be really harmful, but we just accept that. Is that now the view of pot as well in Colorado?
Well, I think people here in Colorado are starting to take a finer-grained look and have some more complicated questions about not just how marijuana affects people who, healthy individuals who are, you know, smoking it, but how, for instance, a little bit of marijuana and a little bit of alcohol can combine to create impairment that you might not have at either of those doses alone. There are a lot of other questions that have been raised about the ingestion of marijuana or the smoking of marijuana at various points in people's lives. For instance, whether pregnant women are really putting their children at risk if they smoke marijuana, or, you know, at what point in a teenager's development does the use of marijuana really affect their evolving brain? And a lot of these questions haven't been as answered as fully as they can be because
marijuana has been a Schedule I drug, and therefore the research is pretty highly regulated. We don't have, and I'm sure Dr. Zane can speak to this, we don't have the kind of research, I think, necessarily, or the volume of it to be able to make these public policy and public health decisions in an intelligent way.
Dr. Zane, do you think that's changing now? Is there more research we need to do to get more fine-grained, as Alicia says about this, as usage becomes legal and more widespread?
We most assuredly need to do more research. We should have been doing it before it became legal, and it would have allowed us to know some of the impact of what could have happened before legalization. We have to make it easier to do research on marijuana, and we have to fund research on marijuana now that we have legalized it, and hopefully many of those things will come forward, and hopefully other states will look at Colorado as a research experiment on how not to legalize marijuana.
How not to, because there wasn't enough sophistication in the legal framework around it, Dr. Zane?
From the perspective of how edibles were legalized, it was almost unthinking to be able to allow gummy bears to be purchased with the amount of THC that's in it. How can you sell a cookie with the intention that one cookie is six doses of marijuana? How can you sell a chocolate bar knowing that it's 20 doses of marijuana? It simply does not conform to convention of dosing or servings.
Wow. Talk about, yeah, it does sound like going in dumb. Charles in Lexington, Kentucky. Charles, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'll make it quick. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, with this, what would kind of a floodgate opening, I'm wondering if they're trying to, Colorado that being, trying to implement some type of educational system for those who are kind of on the cusp, just about to be the age of 21 legal age for buying weed, to, you know, tell people what the harmful effects are and things of that nature. So,
yeah, we'll ask Alicia, what about it? You mentioned some new legislative consideration. Is there more public education planned? Is there a refinement planned of the production of edibles?
You know, some of the tax revenue has been set aside for public health and public education messages. I'm not so sure how effective the first couple have been. I mean, I know people who create them would argue with me, but some people just make fun of them. There is one, for instance, of a guy who's trying to hang a big screen TV, and he's totally stoned, and he smashes the TV. It's trying to get across the message that be careful what you do when you've ingested or smoked quite a bit of marijuana, but personally, I think these messages need to be a little more targeted than that. That's almost, you know, I think insulting to some users. So I think we have ways to go on the public health messaging, but we also first really need the science behind it to be able to project effective messages.
And what about labeling and the production of edibles? To Dr. Zane's point, where you've got six doses in one cookie, that seems like an invitation to overdose. Is that being refined?
You know, during this entire debate when this amendment was being passed, I had the impression, and maybe it's just because it's how things used to be, quote-unquote, but I had the impression, and I think a lot of people did, that edibles were maybe a baggie of marijuana in brownies. Now, there wasn't any public discussion of the sophistication and the expanse of the edible market that has unfolded. I think there is quite a bit of talk, and I wouldn't be the slightest bit surprised to see some further refinement of the laws that are on the books to make this serving size issue a lot easier for people to grasp when they look at a label.
And Alicia, what's going on with this? I'm reading about hash oil explosions in houses.
Oh, man.
People are buying pot and doing what? What's leading houses to blow up?
Well, it took quite a while of looking on the internet to figure out what it is they're doing, but they're essentially using butane, which is a highly explosive gas, to cook marijuana and cook the oil off of it. The problem is, if it's not a very highly ventilated house or garage or what have you, any small spark can set off an explosion, and people get pretty badly burned. And I wouldn't be surprised if Dr. Zane had seen some of these people in his ER, because these incidents, the number of these incidents is on the rise.
Dr. Zane, people...
We've seen 1,000% increase in the admissions to our burn unit for butane hash oil-related explosions and burns.
What's your advice to other states who are considering a move like Colorado's, Dr. Zane?
Do some background work, do some research, try and understand the pharmacokinetics of what is actually being legalized. Nothing else would have been legalized in this way. Think about what happens when you eat a marijuana cookie, let alone what the packaging should look like. We don't understand, nor can we predict, what the absorption is going to be. We would not have made anything else legal like that. We wouldn't have made alcohol legal like that. We wouldn't have done anything legal like that. It's simply not predictable. And when something's that unpredictable, it's not ready for prime time. And that should be the take-home message to other states, is be careful what you unleash.
Alicia, your sense of the message out of Colorado, is it a green light to other states? Is it a flashing yellow light? What's the experience suggest for others?
Yeah, I think other states could learn quite a bit from Colorado. The first thing I would suggest is if they go the medical marijuana route, as many states already have, 20 or 30 as I recall, keep some pretty tight screws on who is eligible to receive those types of cards, so that you actually have people with glaucoma and cancer who are getting those cards, as opposed to, oh, my back hurts, which is what we've seen a lot of. The edibles thing, as Dr. Zane has mentioned, I would suggest that states would want to look very carefully at concentration levels and keep those pretty low because of the absorption questions. The tax revenue is a wonderful thing, of course, to many cash-strapped governments, but there are some real limitations on how you can spend that money. For instance,
Alicia, we're out of time right there, but that's a lot already. At the Denver Post and Dr. Richard Zane, University of Colorado Hospital, thanks to both of you today. This is On Point.